We've got less than a half hour left. I can't believe it going so quickly, but we have another guest that we're very excited about. Her name is Leslie Hoban Blake. She is the vice president of the Drama Desk. She is also a contributor to Theater Mania and co-host of the biweekly Manhattan cable television program 2 on the Isle. Leslie, it's great to have you in the neighborhood. Can you hear me?
Yes, David, of course I can. Hi, lovely to speak with you.
Lovely to speak with you, too. And also Richard is with me in the studio. Richard.
Hello, Schuer. Richard.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's a little gray here today, but other than that, I'm fine.
Well, it's hot and gorgeous in Colorado.
It's about 95 degrees today.
Oh, please, don't even say those numbers to me.
Well, 95 is a little brutal. It's a little too hot here. But anyway, let's talk about some hot Broadway scenic design. Ooh.
Yes, I know all the important awards, right? The scenic design awards. Of course, without a scenic design, you don't have a show unless you have a plank and a piece of wood and a bare stage
and
you can have a show.
Something along
and
those
you
lines.
Can, really, you can. But it's better looking with the scenic design.
So let's talk about the scenic design of a play. The nominees are John Lee Beatty for Other Desert Cities, Daniel Ostling for Clybourne Park, Mark Thompson, One Man, Two Governors, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Dong Yao.
It's just Governors without the, they dropped that other letter.
Yeah, actually, I wasn't mispronouncing Governors. I'm trying to deal with Dong Yao Whirl of Peter and the Starcatcher.
I see. I think it's Whirl. Danielle Whirl.
Danielle Whirl.
I believe.
So, your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that John Lee Beatty has not been out of this category for God knows how long. I can't remember a year that has not been a John Lee Beatty year, but I don't think that this is his year to win for a number of reasons. Other Desert Cities is a single-set show. It's a very nice 1950s set show. I seem to remember seeing that picture in a lot of magazines from the period, a stone wall with a fireplace and whatnot, but it's not a very exciting set, and therefore that one I don't think is part of the deal. Of the three that are left, Danielle Whirl is the one that we were not too sure about how to pronounce. It's a very exciting set because it becomes part of the show. It comes down, it comes apart, it goes back up, it does other things. So that makes it very exciting. Daniel Ostling has to take his set in Clybourne Park and from one year in the 1950s, and then bring it up to the 2012 when it's fallen apart. And so he has the same set, but in two different time periods. And One Man, Two Governors is two separate sets with a staircase that you can't see, but somebody keeps falling down it.
Yes.
I don't know if it's English, but you know what I mean. And if I were to say, if it's my guess as to who ought to get it, mm-hmm. I would say that Mark Thompson for One Man, Two Governors ought to get it.
Okay, and for scenic design of a musical, the nominees
question in my mind. Bob Crowley has once. It's very interesting. It's a pub. It doesn't change. It's a pub. Tobin Ost, Stephen Ortel, Sven Ortel do Newsies, which is very reminiscent of the old-time Oliver, the original set with a bunch of metal things that move back and forth and become different places. And George Sipon, you want to get that one right, Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark. I don't even want to talk about that one if I don't have to.
Leslie, for scenic design even?
Come on. There was so much that could have been done with that show that wasn't, because it was all done on Ghost the Musical instead by Rob Howell and John Driscoll. The things I feel that should have been done with Spider-Man were done on Ghost the Musical.
I thought Ghost the Musical was an amazing-looking show.
Yeah, that's it. It doesn't deserve it for anything else, but it couldn't possibly be beaten for that. And which brings in lighting design as well, but I don't think that's my category.
Well, you know what? We have a little bit of time, so if you want to talk about lighting design.
Well, I would like to give that lighting design by, let me find out who's got that. Hang on one second.
Sure.
I have my list in front of me, but it's on... It's online. See, so you've got
a... Well, lighting design of a musical, you've got Gershwin's Porgy and Bess, Follies, Once, and Ghost.
I'm not interested in giving Ghost the musical, the best musical that's anywhere. It's far from it. But who did the lighting design on that? I'm looking
Hugh Vanstone.
Hugh Vanstone.
Right.
I think between Hugh Vanstone, Rob... I moved it. I shouldn't have done that. Bess...
Rob Howell and John Driscoll for Ghost are the set designers.
Right,
of Ghost,
right. I think that Ghost should get it for both scenic design and lighting design. I think that they should go together. I don't think that it's, I don't see how you can separate it on that particular show. And if anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about, They show a man coming to life on stage. They show a man walking into a moving subway train on stage. And someone behind me said, I didn't pay all this money to come see a musical. I mean, to see a film when I've come to a musical. I didn't feel that way at all. I felt that it was it was taking musicals into the 21st century and doing things that perhaps Spider-Man could have done with all its millions, you know.
I have to agree with you on Ghost. I mean, I had certain serious issues with the book of Ghost.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's dumb as dirt, but...
Yeah.
But looking at that show...
Even the book, I didn't know that.
Even that scene, the opening, when they're walking through New York and in mm-hmm. the stock market and the numbers rolling across the stage, I was like,
right.
Every
right.
I've told people this, every opera that you're going to see at like City Center, within uh-huh. 5 years, every opera is going to look like
every single one.
Yeah.
But I did think something else that nobody else mentioned, I don't think, I haven't heard anybody else say it, is I absolutely adored the choreography on that show. It looked as if it were done, as if it were one particular person. He wasn't nominated, the choreographer on the show, but he moved things as if it were a ballet. The people moved in sync no matter what they were doing. And again, I can't find the name of that person. If you got that, choreographer, here we go. No, he wasn't nominated, so I don't have his name. Do you have his name?
Unfortunately, I don't. I just have the name.
But anyway, so I thought that the choreography on that show was wonderful, but totally overlooked. Speaking of overlooked, can I quickly throw in two of my worst overlooked pieces while I'm on the phone?
Go for it.
Okay, well, and they both come out of the same show, from Streetcar Named Desire.
Right.
Neither Blair Underwood nor Nicole Larry Parker were even given a nod, and I think it's a tremendous oversight.
I thought they
breathed life into a play that, except, I've never seen a Stanley except for Marlon Brando that moved me the way that Blair Underwood did, that made me feel that this was a potentially viable character. And she did a wonderful job of making me forget any other Blanche that I've seen. And I thought those two things really are worth a lot. And then there was another oversight, and it's, I hope I'm not going to get into trouble with what I'm about to say, but there was once a play called Colored Museum, and it was written by George C. Wolfe, a very famous writer-director here in New York, multiple Tony winner, mm-hmm. who wrote a series of, no, that wasn't who wrote Colored Museum.
Yes, it was, George
Colored
C. Wolfe.
Museum. Oh, he did write it, okay.
Yeah.
And in there was a thing called Last Big Black Mama on the Couch
Show. On the
Couch
show. Play, uh-huh, yeah.
Uh-huh, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
okay,
there was,
so there was also a song in Martin Short's one-man show that didn't have one man, it had many people, and it was the big black singer, or the big black mama, steals the show with the big 11 o'clock number. It was a whole musical piece about that. And so both Ghost and a show that's been very sadly passed over, Lysistrata Jones, had that kind of character, a very large, not necessarily unattractive woman in each one. In Lysistrata Jones, it was Liz Michael. And in Ghost, the lady's name, and I don't want to get her name wrong, is Divine.
I have to go there to featured actress in a musical. Where are you?
Divine Joy Randolph.
There you go. Divine
Say
Joy
it again?
Randolph. Divine,
Divine
Joy Randolph.
Joy Randolph. Yeah. And frankly, I thought that what Divine Joy Randolph did in Ghost the Musical was upsetting to me in terms of cliché. Whereas I thought what Liz Michael did in Lysistrata Jones was clever and original. And since they were both playing essentially the same role, which is to say that character comes in and steals the show, I'd rather see her do it in a clever way than simply because she has a big voice and a cliched part. But Liz Michael wasn't nominated and Divine Joy Randolph was. So them's my oversights. I don't have a whole big list, but those were my ones.
I have a question for you. This is Richard Shore speaking.
I can barely hear you.
Is that a little better?
Not really, but I'll listen very hard.
Okay. I'm just curious what you thought, if you saw, of the reworking of Porgy and Bess.
Oh, well, that's really interesting. When we did our little show, Two on the Isle, and Dave knows that show because he used to do it, I, at that time, back in November, said, just give Audra McDonald her award now, because there is no way that anybody's going to match that role. And I was right. I mean, I thought maybe Evita, I thought maybe Tracy Bennett, but of course it wound up that was a play, not a musical. I didn't know that at the time. So there wasn't anybody out there to me who came, you know, and anywhere near that particular role. Then you get to the rest of the play. I don't know. I really love David Alan Greer's work in it. I felt, and I think that Norm Lewis can do just about anything, including Inspector Javert. I loved his Inspector Javert in Les Mis. But I didn't see, he was too sophisticated and polished to ever be Porgy. Even though he had a white beard and they did something horrible to his leg. I talked to him, he said he had to have a massage every night after the show. Because he had to stand. He was not allowed to be in a cart. They made him stand. And so he was really crippled in a horrific way. But I just couldn't see those two characters together no matter what. Even with his kindness and her, you know, her need. I thought that Philip Boykin was just wonderful as Crown. But I'm not sure about the whole thing. There was one lovely character in that. He came out of Scottsboro Boys, and I don't have the thing in front of me. He was wonderful. He played a minor character, but he got to sing A Woman is a Sometime Thing. Mm-hmm. And if anybody can help me here, talent on the way up. And he was overlooked. He wasn't picked out in any way. And they've got Philip Boykin opposite David Alan Grier, so that's going to probably nullify the two of those out. But I mean, in terms of what I thought about how it worked, did it work? Is that the question?
Yeah. Richard, did it work? Do you think it was worth all the reworking? Is it still?
Well, I didn't think it was worth Stephen Sondheim getting his pants in a wedge over. No, I mean he didn't see it, and he made all sorts of allegations about it. They tried to modernize it for a modern audience, which is to say, they tried to make it a little more palatable. It's really hard to see a play set in an all-black town where nobody has any money and everybody's poor and the nasty white guys come in and do really terrible things. I mean, it's such a cliche in and of itself. So there's nothing you can do about that. You can't change that. Standing Porgy up on his feet does not change that. It is an opera. It's not a musical. I thought they made it work as best one could as a musical. And again, as I say, it was worth all of that just to see Audra, because they beefed up her role to such a degree that it really allowed her to not just sing, but to act and to show us the character of what that poor woman was going through and why there were no choices for her but the choices that she made.
Well, thank you.
And that in of itself was a marvelous thing to see.
Well, thank you, Leslie Blake, for sharing your choices.
Richard, I hope that answered the question. I probably didn't, but...
Oh, no, it did. It was very interesting to hear you talk about it. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you for asking. Take care, Dave. I hope I see you the next time around.
You betcha, Leslie.
Take care, dear. Bye-bye.
Enjoy the Tonys. Bye-bye now.
Oh, yeah. Bye.